Good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted that you could join us today for our webinar titled Data-Driven Marketing, What Corporations Want, What Consumers Demand. And I want to especially thank Canon Solutions America for their sponsorship. You know, data is at the heart of today's marketing activities, and corporations are increasingly relying on data to learn about customers. They're looking at it to make decisions about what new products or services to invest in, and they're adjusting their sales and their marketing activities driven by good data. In parallel, that end consumer is savvy and empowered, and they really expect interactions with suppliers to be data-driven. Today, what we're going to be talking about are both the challenges and the opportunities associated with good data-driven marketing. And I'm so delighted today. I'm joined by what I consider to be one of the best experts in the area of data-driven solutions, and that's Luke Heffron, and he's a Senior Vice President of Integrated Marketing at SG360. What we're going to do today is I'm going to start with just a brief overview of what we see with data and how it drives customer intimacy. Luke's going to then take it from there, and he's going to share with you a number of great case histories and provide an SG360 perspective on how they deal with data. We'll wrap up with a few recommendations, and then we'll make sure that throughout the course of the webinar, we get at any questions that you might have. Now, when you think about the marketplace today, it's really challenging for marketers like yourselves. First of all, buyers trust their own ideas and advice from friends above advertising. They're dealing with and are bombarded with messages and choices that aren't easily differentiated. And then time is of the essence, and people often prioritize that much, much higher than price. Well, when you think about all that, there was a great book, and it was actually written almost 20 years ago by Michael Tracy and Frank Wiersma, and it was titled The Discipline of Market Leaders. And basically what it said is that there are ways that companies can differentiate themselves from competitors. And one of the big messages is that you have choices to make. You can be the best provider of innovative products and have a product leadership positioning. You can be operationally excellent and really deliver the lowest cost of doing business. Or what their focus is that you can be customer intimate. And that means that you deliver a range of customer services and you personalize the way that you communicate and work with customers to meet their needs. When you think about it, and you think about the companies that we all know, there are a number of them that fit into each one of these buckets. When I think about innovative products, I instantaneously think of Apple and how they encourage innovation, and they've got a risk-oriented management style, and they emphasize the design and the engineering talent in the company. And they spend time educating you and me on the benefits of the specific new product and service capabilities that they're bringing to the marketplace. This next slide looks at the concepts surrounding, are you the low-cost provider? And the chart to the right, which is a bit of an eye test, actually rates the top companies in terms of efficiency, and they base it on margin growth to sales growth. And when I'm one of those efficient organizations, I want to be the lowest-cost provider. I make sure I'm tremendously efficient at transaction management. I've got well-entrenched measurement systems, and I work hard at managing customer expectations. But what Tracy and Wiersma say is, you know, in some instances, customer intimacy is the best long-term strategy. And what they describe intimacy as is it's the concept that describes that supplier's ability to become accepted and known as a regular partner with its customers. And basically, what you become is that supplier that knows the customer and the company with its objectives and difficulties, and you build out that unique, optimal solution for that individual client. And what you want to be able to do is leverage intimacy to build much, much more loyal customers. Now, one of the big things that marketers have said is that, you know, 99% of the companies out in the marketplace today are absolutely convinced that, you know, data is essential to marketing success and building out that intimacy. 57% of CIOs anticipate the data in their organizations that they'll need to handle is going to grow by 33% in the next 12 to 18 months. So the real question is, with that bombarding with more and more data, how do you transform that data into meaningful information to really do a good job at building out those intimate communications? Now, one of the big components is that data-driven marketing is clearly critical to success. InfoTrends surveyed more than 1,000 companies, and what we found was that when we looked at the marketplace, 29% of the marketers were doing personalized one-to-one communications. Another 33% were doing segmented communications or trying to communicate one-to-few. So the message inside of that is people want to personalize. Here's the challenge, and that's quality. In a study that was done by Experian, what they found out was that on average, 27% of the revenues in companies today are wasted because of inaccurate or incomplete customer and prospect data. And 26% of the people that responded to the survey felt that their data was inaccurate. On the opportunity side, what happened was that more companies enjoyed increased profits if they'd done a great job at managing the quality of their data centrally. Now, the other component is that customers, by the way, regardless of age demographic, expect personalization. That millennial, you know, both wants personalization and they do want to be in control of personal information. The baby boomer is a little bit more sensitive relative to privacy, but regardless of channel, they do expect a personalized message. Now, we just completed a study at InfoTrends called Customer Engagement Technologies, the State of the Market. And what we did is we asked companies across a variety of different vertical industries, how does your company plan to improve the customer experience as it relates to customer communications? And the top responses were that these marketing executives wanted better tailored offerings, and they wanted better, more relevant, data-driven personalization. The other thing that we see is that if I've got bad data, it's bad for business. And this happens to be an example of an insurance mailing. And what happened was the supplier failed to dedupe his database, so the individual recipient got the same mailing from three different insurance agents. Now, the other component was that it was addressed to Dear Mister, and if you're using or you're sending me a letter, please use my first name. The offer in the letter was for teen drivers, but there were no teenagers in the house. And then, of course, I won't say anything about the design quality, but the challenge inside of that was that mailing really had nothing intimate about it. And so what we're seeing are people that are looking at and trying to deploy strategies to get much, much, much better data. What they're doing is they're first and foremost centralizing, and they're trying to eliminate those silos that have popped up of customer information. They're honing in on hiring the right skills. They're investing in quality management tools, and what they're trying to do is turn that data into insight for intimate and personalized marketing campaigns. Now, what we're seeing is this whole concept around a movement towards centralization of data. And when you look at your data inside of organizations, what we see in the silo side of it is I've got data coming in from direct mail. I've got data coming in off the website. I've got, data coming in from social media. And none of that insight or information is being integrated. And so what the Experian data quality benchmark report said is there is a move afoot for centralizing data. And in fact, what they also said was that there's a new game in town, and it's actually the emergence of a new position, and that's the chief data officer. And so you really need to not just centralize, but make sure that you've got the right skills in place. not just that chief data officer, but you've got to make sure that you've got the right analytics professionals, business data stewards, data scientists, records managers. And then you've got to develop data policies and standards, and you really need to do a great job at enforcing them. You want to make sure that that data officer is an advocate for data and promotes it as a critical source of value to the organization. Now, we're also seeing a move afoot to invest in much, much better data quality management tools. And so what we're seeing are companies, and what we see is companies, and 80% of those that were surveyed, that have some sort of a data quality solution. It cuts across the gamut, ranging from data profiling to monitoring and auditing to data cleansing. The key is that what we're finding is that more and more multinational companies are using quality data solutions, and we're also seeing that there's a sharp correlation between company profits and data quality tools. The companies that have seen significant increases in profits use those data quality solutions versus those that have had profits that have stayed the same or decreased. Now, when we ask customers, you know, which of the following data analytic initiatives they were planning on for 2015 and 2016, and what the importance was, what they were trying to do is, first and foremost, capture that entire customer experience. They wanted to understand how the customer moved through that journey in terms of the relationship with the organization. They wanted to collect better customer experience analytics. They wanted to work to create a single view of the customer and integrate that siloed data. They wanted to do things like behavioral analytics and location intelligence. And ultimately, what they were trying to do is turn that data into insight. Now, I have to tell you, this happens to be one of my favorite data cartoons. And if you're having a challenge scene, I'm going to just take you through it. What it says is, we've now collected 250 terabytes of data about our customers, and the software has analyzed the data. And the boss says, great, big data. What does the software tell us? And the employee says, it tells us we have 250 terabytes of data. Well, that is not insight. What you really want to be able to do when you're turning that data into insight is you want to be able to start with knowing your customers. And what that means is you want to be able to look at those unique customer segments and identify those incredibly high-value customers. Then what you want to be able to do is, once I've identified those high-value customers, I need to cultivate them. And I want to look at the differences between new, existing, and lost customers. And I want to look at what are my sales by product line and what demographics by which products. And then what I'd like to be able to do so that I can grow my business is I want to be able to leverage predictive modeling, and I want to take that customer data and I want to identify those people with the highest propensity to accept offers. The bottom line is that data is all about customer intimacy and making sure that that customer feels like they are the most important asset that your organization has. Now, with that, what I am going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Luke so that Luke can share with you how SG360 really approaches integrated direct marketing solutions. So, Luke, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Barb. I'll give you just a real brief introduction on SG360 for those of you who are not familiar with us, and then I'll jump into my portion of how we're accomplishing this. So our company was founded in 1956. We're based out of Chicago, and we are primarily a direct marketing execution organization. So what that means is anything that has to do with communicating messages to our customers, whether it's acquisition, retention, or loyalty, whether it's direct mail or any online channel. From the direct mail side, we'll be producing over 2 billion pieces this year annually. So anybody that says direct mail is not alive and well is welcome to come to our facilities, especially this time of the year. We are very busy and very happy for that work. We have a lot of household names, but the reason I like to show this slide is because we have longevity with our customers. And the only way that we can continue to enjoy that longevity is not by playing the pricing game and continually getting cheaper, although everybody has to do that. We have to save money, but we also have to innovate, and we have to drive new ideas to help our clients stay in business with theirs. And that's where our longevity comes from. So we've all seen word clouds similar to this, but the big thing right now around big data is it isn't just big, it's deep, it's wide, it's complex, it's growing. So where are we with all this? Is it making us any better as marketers? And is it making us any more effective and efficient, or is it making us less? And also, how do we know? So big data is great, but it's also created these tough questions. And today what I want to do is break this down for you into some basics to at least give you some real-life examples of how we're successfully applying big data for our customers. And Malcolm really said it best. The truth here is not in getting more data, because it's simply building our confidence. It's not building our accuracy. So the real truth lies in accuracy, but also in action. How can we make this actionable for our customers and for our customers' customers? So where can we really begin to leverage the existing and available data that's already out there to become a better vehicle for our marketing efforts? So for us, the truth and data breaks down into two simple areas. In any direct marketing engagement, you need to understand exactly how that data is going to be used before you start trying to apply that data to a job or to a campaign. It makes no sense to go shopping for, say, a saw before you know if that piece of wood you have needs to be cut or if it needs to be hammered. So you really have to understand the objectives. And from a direct mail standpoint, I break data down into its simplest form of two functions, either data that drives the process, when do we send something, where do we send it, how or what channels do we send it in, and or data drives the content, who do we send it to, what do we say, why do we send this now to that person, what offer, et cetera. So data drives the process or data drives the content. And when you start thinking about it in that specific two breakdowns, it's a lot easier to start to figure out where you can bring value, where you can differentiate yourselves, and how you can create that intimacy, as Barb said, with the customer, or create that operational excellence as well. So what I'm going to do is break down both of these for you and give you some examples of each and a little bit of an example of how we break it down, how it seems to be resonating with our clients right now. So the first one is data drives the process, and we'll step through that, and then we'll get into data driving the content. So in terms of data driving the process, we can kind of chart this out in terms of automation and complexity. And the reason I like to go through this illustration is because we all hear all this different terminology around marketing and data and so forth. And our customers hear this as well. They come to us and say, I need to create a trigger campaign, or I need to get more omni-channel, wise or intelligent. And really, we first have to make sure that what the customer is saying and what we're hearing are on the same page. So we like to start with making sure that we have an understanding of how data works and what those processes are. So the basic process is transactional, and that's what we're all familiar with. We've got a single campaign, a single list, and a single channel that we're going to execute this out to. Well, in our case, most times it's print, but it can also emails can be transactional as well. The next one is a trigger, and this is where data is I think, not leveraged to the degree that it can be. And that is, we always think about data as driving variability, but data also drives timing. So any kind of trigger can be either manually or automated in a fashion to get that message to that person based on some type of timing event, either behavioral or calendar driven or some other some of the process. And then the next level up in this complexity and automation is omni-channel or multi-channel or whatever you want to call, but it's as simple as combining an email or a direct mail together, or an email and a billboard or something else. So some call to action between three different channels or more. And then the last one is full integration. So this is combining not only channels together and multiple touch points, but also business rules and triggers all into a centralized campaign management system. This is kind of the nirvana. This is where a lot of people think they want to go, but they're starting down in the transaction or trigger mode, and they haven't even grown up into that. So to be able to go through those steps with your clients and understand where they're truly coming from, and then help them understand what they need for that particular objective in terms of driving the process.
Luke, I have a couple questions for you before you move on. Could you back up a slide?
I can.
Luke, when you look at this process, one of the questions that came in is, how good is customer data in terms of your ability to work with that up front? And then how well do those same customers know the triggers?
Well, that's a great question, and it's kind of first of all, let's take the first one. How good is the customer data? It's all over the place. It really depends. It's a really open question to answer. So I think the answer to that would be, do you know how to evaluate properly the type of data that you need, and then how good that data is? So that really comes back to your slides, Barb, with understanding the right skill sets that you need, investing in quality management tools, and really understanding where they are in centralizing that data. So, you know, if you're talking about a mail list, there are certain things that you can do to make sure that that data is adequate. If you're talking about a predictive model data list or some other type of data list, there's different ways to evaluate that and make sure that it's clean. So it really depends on the individual customer and the application. In terms of that data-driving triggers, it's kind of the same thing. It comes down to understanding the objective of that particular campaign and then understanding how you can best meet that objective, and then do you have the tools within that data set to hit those triggers. So it's kind of working from a business standpoint instead of from a data standpoint first. So what are we trying to do? Are we trying to send a birthday program out? Okay, what do we need to do to send a birthday program? What kind of content or data do we need to trigger that? And then do we have that? As opposed to, here's all this data, what can we trigger with it? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep. Just a quick, from your perspective, is your customer base getting more data savvy? Has it improved, I guess, is my question.
That's a loaded question.
Okay.
I don't mean to answer every question with two answers, but we're getting more data. Our customer base they're all getting more data. Are they getting more data savvy? I don't think so, and I don't know that it's their fault. It's just that it's coming in so fast. You know, the majority of big data is click-through content, right? And there's so much of it, and it comes so fast every single day. I read an analogy yesterday. It's like flying an airplane, and they keep putting more and more gauges and instrumentation up in front of you. You can never look up to see where you're going because you constantly have to be looking at all the information coming in. And that's kind of where industries are right now. So people are not. I don't think people are really getting more savvy, but I don't think it's their fault. I think it's moving too quickly right now.
Okay, great perspective. Thanks.
Now, sure. Any more, or I'll keep going?
Keep going.
Okay. Barbara and I have done this before, so I'm glad you interrupted me because you know once I get started, I'll just keep going. All right, so I'll step you through data driving the process first, and four very simple examples of this. So Rico Pentax is one of our customers, and what they simply want to do is provide high-quality collateral information as required on demand. So not on demand, but as needed. So we simply receive the artwork files. There's no real data that goes with them except, metadata like the quantities and the formats and so forth. We create those press proofs and we produce and we bulk ship those out to wherever they're going. So that's a real basic transactional. Now, can that be omnichannel? Of course it can. Can it be triggered? Yes. It can be ordered to an online system. It can be ordered manually. It can be triggered based on inventory levels that are monitored. But in its simplest form, this is transaction. The second piece is a trigger mailing. So with another client of ours, they were looking to consolidate resources, ordering resources and management resources across multiple locations. And they were looking for a way to make planning and forecasting of their marketing collateral materials more efficient. Could they manage that? So we created, took this kind of to the next level, that basic transactional, and created an online scheduling system that could read into their forecasting system and create triggers to manage on-demand production and manage pick and pack inventory for execution, planning, and distribution. When you get into omnichannel, of all companies, we have companies that are dot-com companies that are actually using direct mail. In this case, Uber is trying to get drivers to sign up for Uber, and this has been going ongoing for a while now. This isn't new. But trying to get drivers, recruit drivers to sign up for Uber. Well, they don't necessarily have the email information to solicit to these people, or the emails weren't working. So we actually were working with this dot-com company and tested doing direct mail to recruit drivers to drive them to that online channel. And it was very successful. And there are other dot-com companies that have followed that use direct mail to drive people online. For example, a very large home improvement big box retailer uses direct mail campaigns to motivate their professional contractors to sign up for their app. They don't have those pro contractors' emails, but they have their direct mail. So they're sending them a direct mail mailer to incentivize them to go online. So this cross-channel, omni-channel, from a direct marketing standpoint, can work extremely well. And it can work the other way as well. We have clients where we are sending out emails to say, hey, Barb, pay attention to your mailbox next week for a special offer that's coming. And then full integration. So there's a lot of talk about this. There's very little execution in terms of industry-wide and in terms of percentage of all the, top 1,000 companies that are out there. They're moving in that direction. The future is coming, but we're seeing it lag a little bit behind technology as it typically does. So Salesforce.com and their partner that they purchased, ExactTarget, had a need to create and integrate direct mail into their email campaigns. And so this ties in everything, transaction, trigger, omnichannel, and full integration, because it takes into account all of those factors, business rules, CRM, customer list, email, and direct mail. So we actually fully integrated into the Salesforce Marketing Cloud tool to enable anybody to set up a campaign that originates as either an email, a social, an SMS, or a direct mail, and then set up rules so that it can interchange with the other channels throughout that campaign based on triggers, based on data, and based on rules. So this is really the high end of this. And there are other tools out there that we're working with and that are starting to do this as well. But this is one of the first in the market that is fully integrated and fully operational. So we're pretty excited about that.
That's great, Luke. Hey, listen, I do have another question. On the chart that you indicated, you were moving up that scale in full integration, and I'm going to ask you to respond to this. You mentioned a product called Chili Publish, and one of the folks in the audience said, what is Chili Publish? Could you explain that to him?
Sure, I'm sorry. Chili Publish is one of the tools that we use. I'll try to explain this without getting too far into the weeds. It's one of the tools that we use within a tool such as Salesforce. So when you're in Salesforce, Mark and Carter, any kind of an email service provider, you still need a means and a channel for managing the printed work because it's a different animal, right? You have things such as scheduling and postage selection and those types of IMB barcode. So you need an interface within that tool to be able to provide some of that management along with editing. So Chili Publish is one of the tools that we use to help manage some of that window, if you will, that iframe window within the tool. And if someone would like more information about that, Barb, we can talk offline, but hopefully that at least gives some light into it.
Now, one other question that came in, obviously you're a large company. If I'm a smaller agency or print service provider in this marketplace, how do I get started?
That's a good question. I would look at that original table that I made or something like that and figure out where your skill sets are now. What people do you have and what tools do you have and what are you good at? And start there instead of trying to be everything. There is a real need for people that simply have the knowledge to build any kind of trigger programs. And there's a need for companies to provide really sensible, simple, not over complex, omni-channel campaigns where you're simply taking an email and a direct mail capability and combining them together. Whether it's, whether your customer already has an email service provider and you're tying into it, or you're going to provide both. But I think we kind of get seduced by the sexiness of all the technology that's out there. But when we sit down and talk to our customers, they're not where the market, would like to say they are. We all still need to get and start with the basics and work up from there. So, again, I think smaller type organizations that are looking to provide a service to other smallish organizations and mid-sized organizations, I think there's a huge opportunity there.
Great. Thank you.
It's also a faster sell. It's a lot easier to sell into a mid-sized or a small-sized company with a single solution to get your foot in the door and really understand it than it is to, put in an enterprise solution with something like Salesforce, right? So it's a lot more practical and learn as you go. We have people that have been doing this for, 20 plus years in this industry. So, we started small. We started very basic. This is a little bit off the subject, but the very first digital variable full color print program I was involved with, I looked at this the other day, was 1997. So that was a very simple four color variable for Buick for their newsletter called Interchange back then. So, so you need to start small and work up and take it in a chunk at a time. So I'm going to jump over to Data Drives the Content. And this slide really doesn't have anything to do with my presentation, except I just needed a transition slide, and I thought this is what came up. So this is kind of how we feel sometimes with managing content. So similar to the other table, the other chart, I built one around data-driven content. So instead of automation, I put in intelligence. So we've got intelligence and complexity. So what I mean by intelligence, it drives intimacy, right? The more you know about somebody, hopefully, the more intimate you can become with that customer or that prospect. So this is just one way to look at it. This is not definitive. But the first piece of this is raw. So the personalization, just having a first name on the piece, dear Barb instead of dear Ms. or dear man. The second level then is segmentation. So now we're getting into versioning and customization. So what I mean by that is personalization is dear Barb. Versioning and customization is that if Barb is a dog owner versus a cat owner, then we're going to have, a dog on that piece. And the next piece as we drive up this is kind of a data marketing stack, is behavioral. So there's a lot of different types of behavioral content. This is kind of more on the qualitative side. So purchase data or something triggering a store visit or someone who says, hey, I'm interested in this, or anything that's going to indicate or be an indication of action on the customer or prospect. And then the last one is analytical. So when you get into the predictive modeling and the lifestyle and the viewpoint type of data. So like with the process, I'll give you an example of each of the contents as well. So again, when you're thinking about where we start, I'm showing these in the order of how you would progress into this as a service provider and also how customers should be progressing into this. You know, you can't go from raw data to analytical data in an instant, just like you can't go from transaction to full integration in one campaign. It's a progression that you go through. So DirecTV, very, very simple. It's a complex kit that we are producing, but in terms of data driving that kit, in terms of content, it simply is the first name. So the name, address, and city and state file that comes, it goes on the address block, also goes into the piece that says Dear Barb. Now, there's also data that's driving the process so that we can combine multiple pieces and guarantee that they're matched together, but that's my previous examples. So data-driving content in the raw area is just first-name personalization. That's been going on, you know, since before 95 and 97 area. The second one is segmentation. So segmentation in terms of Carnival Cruise Lines is you've taken a previous cruise. So we know what ship that you are on. We know that where you live versus where you took the cruise. So you either drove there or you flew there. And we might know some other things such as activities. So we can start to segment these customers based on their ship preference, their ship frequency, and their location. So we're kind of getting into the one-to-one, but it's more of a segmentation. And then the next one is behavioral. So in this case, behavioral is really starting to get into previous purchases. So when was the contractor in last? What kind of a contractor are they? And then what kind of predictive data can we use to offer specific things? So if this is a painter that we know comes in and purchases paint every 4 weeks or every 3 weeks, and they love the Behr brand, then we're able to drive a direct mail piece to the painter, to their first name, based on when we predict they're going to come in next, and we can show the Behr brand of paint. And we also know typically when you buy paint, you're going to buy, you know, brushes. So we'll have a brushes offer in there as well. So you're using data to drive particular predictive models along with the trigger, along with the personalization. And then finally, we get on to full analytical. So we've got a lot of different customers where we're doing analytical. Costco Wholesale is looking to improve response rates for members. And they have a lot of analytics already and have done a lot of data work on those customers and behavior and predictive and everything else and offers and everything else. But what they're looking for, is there a way that we can talk to different customers differently to incentivize them to come in? Are different people motivated for different reasons? So regardless of if they're a millennial or a silent generation, regardless of what their spend is or how often they come in, or do they like, you know, do they lean towards perishables versus other products more, what else can we do? Can we talk to them based on their motivation, their reason for coming in, not what they come in for or how often? Can we talk to them and more in the type of messaging that's going to incentivize them to renew? So that's a more of a qualitative and analytical approach that, again, takes everything into account downstream and adds another layer on top of that.
Okay. I've got a bunch of questions that have come in now, Luke, for you. So you're going through these different, you know, models on content. Talk to us a little bit about what level of sophisticated software you're using to manage these programs. What exactly are you using out there, and how complex is it, and how expensive is it?
Okay. we probably don't have time to go into all of that. I love talking about that, as you know, Bud. But you didn't give me 3 hours, so I'll try to answer without being too vague. In terms of software, and I don't want to be smug either, but most of the software is off the shelf. It's a matter of applying business logic and business sense to approaching the problem. So you know, we don't want to get too far into the technicalities of all of this before we understand what the business needs are, what the client has, and that's a great segue to my next slide. I'm going to be repetitive here, but then ultimately, what gaps are there, and what tools do we need to fill those gaps? So I always hesitate when people say, what tools should we be investing in? Well, it's more of what market do you want to go after? Where on these scales do you want to, are you ready to be? What are your clients' needs to meet those gaps? And then what tools do you need? Ultimately, the tools is really, to me, it's the last question, not the first one. And I don't mean to be vague around that. But, there's a ton of tools in each of these applications that we talked about. So it's really first about, and it's kind of like saying, I want to look for a house. Okay, Barb, well, what kind of a house do you want? What kind of a neighborhood are you looking for? What's your budget? Really understanding those fundamental questions up first before we go, help you find a house or, help you get a saw if you're really looking to hammer something together.
Now, the other question that came in is what kinds of a back-end system are you using to manage, the call to action in an email or print or telemarketing campaign? So how do I take those responses in, and then how do I use them to augment data for the next campaign?
That's a good question. It's kind of, someone's going to get frustrated with me because it's kind of the same answer as the one I just gave.
Okay.
It depends on the vertical that we're in. So, for example, if we're in a financial arena and we're doing direct mail or direct marketing for mortgage lending companies, we're probably not going to have anything on that back end. That's going to feed directly back into the customer, and they're going to manage it on their side with their own tools. We do the obvious tools like IMB. Barcoding for direct mail, so we can track, on that side. If it's in a retail environment, then again, it's going to be dependent on what the customer's ability is for closing that loop. For example, if we're doing a campaign that's specific to a purchase, can we put unique coupon codes into those pieces and track those all the way back to the register? If we're doing something that is call center based, can we set up unique 800 call numbers? Each of those offers that we're testing or that we're doing to measure that way. So, it's really about how is a customer closing the loop currently. We are not, at the moment, we are not a pure database play or data management play company. So we need to be flexible with our clients in terms of what systems they already have in place and how do we integrate into those. Now, on a smaller scale, when you talk about a smaller business dealing with smaller customers or mid-sized companies, and you're looking, for closing out that loop, again, it really comes back to that business conversation. How are they doing it now? What do we need to measure, and what is the most effective tools for doing that with? So I'm sorry if that's somewhat vague, but it's such a broad question. It's hard to get into specifics.
Yeah. Gotcha. Now, I have two more questions for you, and then, but the next one is, where are you headed with mobile, and what do you see as the implications of mobile technology on your business, as well as your customer's business?
So there's some really interesting things happening with mobile. There's some new technologies that are helping to drive mobile to integrate, two things right now, helping them drive mobile to integrate with other channels such as print. And there's some really neat things out there that are going to ultimately eliminate the QR codes, which are already half dead, if that already. So one is how integrating mobile is looking at the technologies that are helping mobile better integrate with other tools and more tractability. And the other one, and I guess that's kind of both sides of it. How do we integrate with other other channels with mobile, and also how do we make it more accountable and more trackable, because it really hasn't been up to this point. So that's what we're going. We still have to, you know, we still believe in direct mail. It still works. So the integration of mobile into, which is just simply another online channel, integration of mobile into direct mail, you know, what's the best way to do that? So an example is augmented reality. So, you know, it hasn't really, really taken off, but it's something that is out there, and there's some pretty cool applications out there where you can, you know, you can use your mobile phone to integrate with a sign or with a printed direct mail piece. So there's some other technologies that we're watching that are coming that are simpler for integrate, simpler and lower cost than augmented reality, and still accomplish the same thing, and that's tying the mobile back to the print.
Okay. Now the other question that came in is you know, you obviously have some good data skills at SG360, and so I have two questions. The first one is, how did you as an individual get into data, and what's your background? And then what type of data skills do you have in place at SG360?
Well, my background is I have some education in computer science and data science, but the honest answer to my background is street logic, street sense. I've been doing this for a long time. I was fortunate enough to get involved, like I said, back in the mid-90s with automotive, when they were really looking at what data do we have and how can we use it. And back then, it wasn't as complex, so we could really sit down and, you know, and look at the types of data streams that were coming in. And then from there, I migrated over into gaming and had the fortune of working with the two or three largest casino brands in the world. And it was the same kind of evolution. Here's what we did in automotive. Here's how it worked for the big three. Now, how does it apply here? And then from there, I was able to migrate into retail. So it was learning from the ground up and talking to customers from a business standpoint, and really kind of, you know, I was fortunate enough to kind of help them along the way, or help each other along the way. So that was my personal background. I'm sorry, what was the second question?
And then what kind of skills do you have at SG360 on the data side?
Oh, okay. Well, I love your slide, and I can't recall where it was in the presentation bar, but you kind of broke down those different types of data skills. You know, you really need – there isn't any one – data person, right? You need, depending on your industry, you need the data, you know, either internally or externally, you need your fingers on all of those data people right now. So that's, if I could go back to your slide, it's the data analyst, you know, the data person that knows direct mail, that knows list, you know, deduping. There's a lot of different disciplines that you need to have. But again, and not to be smug, it comes back to, what is it that we as a business are going to be, you know, where are we going to pound our stake in? Where are we going to be experts? And then who do we need for that?
Okay, got it. Well, thanks. If others have questions, you know, please shoot them in. I'll let you keep going then, Luke.
Okay, all right, great. Well, I love the questions. That means we're keeping everybody awake anyway. So, or we have a lot of doubters, but I'll go with we're keeping everybody awake. So just to wrap up, so kind of the steps, and now I'm going to sound like a broken record here, everybody, because I was preaching on this, but it seems to be working for us, and that is, first of all, really understanding that objective, right? What is the goal of that campaign? What are we trying to get done? Are we trying to sell vehicles? Are we trying to just get somebody into the dealership, right? Are we trying to ring the phone? Are we trying to actually sell hearing aids? What is it that this campaign that we're talking about, what's the purpose of that campaign? What's the objective? And then what do we need to get that done, both from, you know, both from a data standpoint as well as from an execution standpoint? You know, what data do you need to get somebody to ring the phone versus the data you need to get somebody to get into their next purchase, right? The two different complete objectives. And then what do we have to do that? So those requirements, those to meet those objectives, what tools do we have right now and which ones don't we have? Do we need an analytical tool? You know, do we need somebody that knows how to manage an analytical tool? Do we need a reporting tool on the back end? You know, if we've created this campaign but we can't track it, we can't close the loop, then, you know, we're already setting ourselves up for failure. So what resources do we need to meet those objectives? And then what don't we have, right? If we all agree that we need to have those tools, we need an analytics tool up front, you know, our segmentation database up front. We need somebody who knows how to do that, and we need to track it on the back end. You know, what pieces are missing? And then again, what role does data play in that? Keeping that in, you know, keeping in mind that they cross over each other. There isn't a hard line between process and content, but in this instance, again, where is data playing a role in this? What do we need to pay attention to? And we tend to lose sight of that. You know, a lot of times in a campaign, throughout the design of the campaign, we come back to it and say, hey, wait a minute, time out. Let's go back to the objective of this. The objective of this was to get somebody to pick up the phone. It wasn't to get somebody to select the product or to buy a product or to come in. You know, there's other steps that do that. We need to go back to the basics. So really, what data do we need just to do that? That's fine, we have all this other data available, but what data do we need for this? And then you as the marketing manager, or you as the service provider to the organization, whatever it is, you know, what is the role in this? Where is your value? Where can you differentiate yourself? And where can you show your strengths in this?
Well,
so that's
Luke,
the approach that we take, Barb.
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
Thanks. I said that is great insight, so thank you. What I'm going to do, and if you've got additional questions, please key them in now. But I think what I wanted to do is kind of wrap up with what we heard today. And I think the big question is, how do you know when you've arrived? And if you're doing a good job with data-driven marketing, and typically what you'll see are you've got better customer retention metrics, customer satisfaction goes up, market share goes up, lifetime value metrics improve. Your customers come to you and seek advice on topics outside of your area of expertise. They're asking you how they can expand their partnership with you, and they wind up being one of your best sources of referral. And so when we think about being data-driven, what we're really talking about is truly knowing the people that you sell to, offering the products and services that your customers need via the right marketing channel, and then retaining control over the sales cycle and the conversion process by monitoring what's happening in terms of the actions customers are taking, and then really, finally, building that intimate relationship. And so if you think back to, you know, what Wiersma and Tracy said, well, you can't afford not to be operationally excellent, and you can't afford not to be innovative. You also have to have a major focus on customer intimacy, and that yields substantial benefits for your business. It says, I'm going to have more loyal customers, I'm going to have better customer retention, and I'm going to get more referrals. And so the key strategies, and quite honestly, I think Luke did a great job at articulating this, is that you need to maintain an integrated view of your customer base. You need to plan and target communications at the right time. You need to align your marketing process with the customer's life cycle. You need to act on every response and leverage those triggers so that you can get that next action that you want to incent. And then you want to continuously learn and enrich customer personas with the behaviors that you've tracked. Now, I've got a couple of additional questions that came in. One of the ones, Luke, was you mentioned mail volumes. And I think the total mail volume that you were doing this year, could you repeat that? And then what, if you're doing a campaign and you mentioned several, what does a typical direct mail campaign look like? How many pieces are in that campaign?
So the mail volume that we're doing is over 2 billion. B is
okay,
in boy.
2 billion annually.
Yes.
Okay.
In terms of the campaign, in terms of the campaign size, it's everywhere from, you know, if we're transactional, we can be in the thousands, and even transactional, we can be up in the, you know, in the tens of millions. So it really depends on the customer. We've got everything from full-color sheet-fed, full-color web, digital variable, inkjet, all the way up to inline, so and everything in between. So we have the ability and the luxury to sit down with our customer and really objectively look at it, at the program. So, again, it boils down to what you have, what you're good at, and, you know, where does that equipment best fit into your client needs.
Okay. Now, another quick question of you, and that is, we talked a little bit about mobile technology, and you mentioned QR codes and augmented reality. Do you have any perspective on NFC technology, the near field communications tags?
Well, from our standpoint, personally, we use it for two things. We use it for data-driving content, and we use it for data-driving process. We use NFC in process to help with certain methods of match mailing pieces.
Yep.
And in content, we use it for cross-channel communication again. And there's different types of NFC technologies that are out there. So I see it growing because there are better and easier means for interacting with NFC. So as a provider, I would say keep watching it. Other things are coming that are going to, again, it's becoming more acceptable on phones and more prevalent on phones. It isn't as centralized as it used to be with certain models, and people are starting to pick up on it more. It's really about the careful application of it, and not just the coolness and the neat factor of it. I think that was part of the big fallout with QR codes is when it first came out, they just went on everything because everybody thought they were great and they were really cool, but people got burned out and tired of them because they weren't serving a function so much as they were, you know, serving a technology buzz that we all had. And NFC has the possibility of falling into that same category, and it's a lot. I think there's a lot better, deeper applications for it than that.
Okay. Yeah, I think the big thing, and we sometimes miss the boat on it, is we'll do a direct mail piece, and we look at the offer, the creative, the call to action. And mobile needs to have that same set of characteristics, but people expect even more from mobile relative to delivering a customer experience in terms of an integrated offer that's interactive and those types of things. So we're seeing a lot more emphasis in mobile on not just codes or NFC tags, but really in terms of making sure that it links to a very, very high quality experience for the end customer. Well, I think go ahead, Luke. Let it run.
I'm sorry, Barb. I was just going to add one thing to that. The fourth item on that is trackability, right?
Yeah.
And mobile makes that very difficult. So using NFC as a means to tie back to some media, in this case, a lot of times direct mail, or some online experience to make that more trackable is you know the real key to it.
Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today, and I want to issue a special thanks to Luke for sharing his story at SG360. And, you know, I would also like to, again, thank Canon Solutions America for sponsoring the webinar. Thanks to everybody. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Barb.